Thank you, George. Now, this matter of foreign aid is so complicated, intricate, in so many ways that in the few minutes that I speak, I can hope to point out only some of the high spots. I have depended on a publication of the government, the State Department, Why Foreign Aid, and a publication of the United States Chamber of Commerce with reference to some of the facts that I wish to present. Now, at the very beginning, we have to get into astronomical figures. It's estimated that up to the present time, this country has put out in foreign aid and mutual security $100 billion. And that about half of that amount has been expended since 1945. Now, this aid at first was administered through the United Nations Relief and Rehabilitation Administration, the resources of which were about three-fourths from this country. In 1948, the Marshall Plan was adopted, known as the ERP. And that was supposed to end in 1952. Well, it has ended, but something else has come in to take its place. And that is known as the Mutual Security Program. Now, the Marshall Plan expended, or the money expended under that, amounted to something like $9 billion. But after the Korean War, the picture changed. Many people hoped that, I suppose they hoped, that in 1952 this foreign aid would stop. But it didn't. After the Korean War started, the mutual security program was advanced. And last year, the Congress appropriated over $8 billion for that program. The budget was $8.5 billion. Congress cut it down to $7,320,000,000, but also reappropriated $816 million, which made the program only about $300 million short of what the budget requested a year ago. That is the budget for this particular year, up until the 1st of July, 1952. Now, in the present budget, it is stated that the actual expenditures for foreign aid this year, that is, up to July 1st, will be something over $6 billion, although more money was appropriated than that. But the present budget figures, Mr. Lawrence indicated, are for $7,900,000,000, with the idea that $10.5 billion is going to be spent. That is, from other appropriations that have not been used, the federal government expects to put into foreign aid, that is, military and economic, $10.5 billion. Well, that gives you some of the highlights of the program. Now, some people raise the question, why any foreign aid at all? I suppose that probably we get the best answer from a publication of the State Department itself, and we can get it in these few sentences. The surrender of the Japanese forces in August 1945 was a signal to democratic peoples everywhere that the attempt of the Axis dictators to dominate the world had been crushed. Yet, today, only 6 years later, the danger of an even more terrible world dictatorship mocks at our attempt to enjoy the fruits of peace. And so it is to stop the communistic threat that this foreign aid is proposed and actually carried into operation. Now, I'd like to call your attention to a few passages from this material put out by the United States Chamber of Commerce. I might say that the United States Chamber of Commerce supported the relief under the United Nations Relief and Rehabilitation Administration. It supported the Marshall Plan. It supported the taking over from England with the help to Turkey and Greece when there was a communist insurrection there in 1947. And it supported last year the mutual security program. However, it expressed the view that $5 billion would be the limit that this country should appropriate. Now, that was a year ago, $5 billion. Now, since that time, the debt has increased $8 billion. That is, I take it that this year's deficit will be in the neighborhood of $8 billion. And if all these programs go through, as has been pointed out, there is a prospect of a $15 billion deficit on top of the debt already. Now, I don't know what the United States Chamber's view is with respect to this particular budget that was presented last week by the administration. As I said before, $10.5 billion is proposed for spending this year. If we couldn't afford more than $5 billion last year, it's not likely that this country could stand, according to the U.S. Chamber's bill, an expenditure of $10.5 billion. But as I say, that I don't know what figure is recommended by the United States Chamber on this proposed budget that is before Congress at the present time. Now, with reference to the loan to England in 1946, the National Chamber approved that loan. It was $3.75 billion. And sometime after that, as I said, the Turkey and Greece situation came up. I want to quote just a little from this pamphlet. Meanwhile, Congress approved relief for Japan, Korea, and Germany, aid for the Philippines, China, and Latin America, the Export-Import Bank, and so on. By the end of 1946, U.S. aid, including export bank loans, totaled $15 billion for the post-war period, and there was widespread feeling that the worst was over. But 1947 smashed that illusion. In February, Britain announced she no longer could assist the Greek government in its civil war. The United States filled that breach as Congress, implementing the Truman Doctrine, voted assistance to Greece and Turkey. The National Chamber approved of the Greek-Turkish aid program. The United States also took a new look at the world economic situation, and what it saw was not heartening. This was the situation. Britain's new Labour government, fulfilling campaign promises, was spending huge sums on socialistic schemes and disrupting production with nationalization or threats of it. The spending could have been postponed indefinitely by a country that was broke and carrying on only with assistance. At no time seriously threatened internally by communism, Britain lacked the reason for spending on social services that impelled some other countries of Europe, such as France. Now, in this connection, you recall that about 4 or 5 days ago, Mr. Harriman sent a letter to Senator Connolly, chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee, with a statement that England has been granted $300 million. Just after Mr. Churchill got home, $300 million grant. Then, the next day, I believe it was, the Chancellor of the Exchequer told the English people that they were not going to get their false teeth and their wigs and their hearing aids free anymore. Well, that didn't please the English, and so a question came up as to vote of confidence of the Churchill government. I heard on the radio about an hour and a half ago that Mr. Churchill was sustained by a few votes, but yet the interesting thing is that 275 members of the House of Parliament were in favor of overthrowing the government with respect to the social measures. So that, I think, is something to keep in mind with reference to foreign aid, as to whether it can be cut down or should be cut down. Now, I want to read just a little from an article in the Saturday Evening Post by Demarest Bess. I have some other matter here that I'll not take the time to refer to, but this discussion in the Post about 6 weeks ago was on the subject, can we remake the world? Can we remake the world without going broke? That's the title. And I'm quoting, despite its incalculable consequences, the mutual security program has been accepted by Congress and the people with astonishing calmness, almost apathy. It was approved without any sharp party conflicts. Republicans are as prominent as Democrats among its leading supporters. The debates about it have attracted less popular interest than the jockeying of presidential candidates for the 1952 elections. Now, after a discussion of the whole matter and how the people of Europe feel about it, there is one other passage that I wish to call to your attention. As matters stand today, the whole American economy is being staked upon the hope of revolutionizing the non-Soviet world. The new program is based upon the assumption that all our previous expenditures of money and effort abroad since 1940 will be wasted unless three things happen. The advanced countries of Europe form a genuine federation. The half-billion people in non-Soviet underdeveloped areas choose our brand of revolution in preference to the Russian brand. Americans agree to continue sharing our wealth with the rest of the non-Soviet world. This amounts, in effect, to a mighty gamble, and the reaction to it depends largely upon individual temperaments. The prospect appeals to some Americans as much as it appalls others. It appeals to those who believe that sharing our wealth is speeding up some form of world government. It appeals to many kinds of crusaders who believe that the United States have been chosen by destiny to organize a better world. On the other side, it appalls those Americans who are chiefly concerned with the radical changes which mutual security means for the American traditional system. Indefinite conscription of our young men, federal expenditures greatly in excess of revenues, unparalleled taxes which are certain to increase, the overhanging threat of monetary inflation which already has reduced the purchasing power of the dollar by more than half. The worldwide New Deal, in fact, divides the Americans very much as the domestic New Deal did. Thank you.